And then the recent Inflation Reduction Act included a methane fee, which is the first time that the federal government has charged a fee on greenhouse gas emissions. So again, factors that need to be considered in oil and gas M&A when doing diligence or, you know, thinking about how that affects purchase price adjustments. And then, you know, on the other end, there's obviously a lot of tailwinds in the Inflation Reduction Act, as I'm sure Chris has seen. You know, for clean energy, various tax incentives and credits, which make it a really exciting investment opportunity as well. So going back to your question is kind of it relates to both oil and gas and clean energy and the differences between the two.
You know, the Jekyll and Hyde nature, too, both nationally and internationally, right? So, you know, look at California, Chris. Like, on one hand, they say, okay, in 10 years, no more electric cars. And then literally less than a week later, like, and by the way, don't plug in your electric cars at night, right? Or you know, you have the Biden administration saying we're going to limit permits, we're going to shut down the pipeline, yet he calls up the heads of all the large oil and gas companies and says you need to produce more. In Germany, as a result, you know, they were denuclearizing with respect to nuclear energy. They declared both gas and nuclear power as no longer green. And so they were decommissioning their nuclear reactors that they use for energy. And post-Ukrainian war, they have now shifted and said that they have now made the determination that both gas and nuclear are green. So I think it's interesting you're getting, it must be difficult as a general counsel advising lawyers or on the investment banking side, you know, people are talking out of two sides of their mouth and you have to serve two gods at the same time, right? And you kind of have to wade into the lake slowly to see which god is showing their face at that time that you need to serve. So Christina, how are you appeasing your investors? What are you doing to show that you hear their demands and reacting?
Yeah, so I think the first step is actually measuring your emissions or other ESG factors, making sure that you can establish a baseline and making sure that measurement is accurate and kind of uniform across portfolio companies or across different business units. So, and I think one of the issues that Kevin may speak to is kind of a lack of uniformity around those measurements and standards and how to make sure that, you know, you're comparing apples to apples. So, you know, some companies have been engaging consultants, using carbon accounting software programs, you know, having dedicated employees to make sure that they're capturing all the information that they need. So once they have that information, you know, how do you disclose that best to your stakeholders? And I think they're, you know, one way to do it is through, you know, annual ESG reports. You know, we've seen these from public companies and investment firms that kind of a glossy report that goes out to their investors on an annual basis, outlining their results from the prior year. So kind of or establishing that baseline, what they intend to do, case studies, you know, stories to kind of explain their perspectives around how their companies are handling ESG. You know, having templates for portfolio companies to report their data back to be aggregated. You know, due diligence questionnaires from institutional investors. You know, you're kind of seeing that data coming in and going back out. And then setting goals in order to show improvement, making sure that, you know, your investors can tell when you're, you know, what your goals are and what steps you're taking to achieve those goals. You know, others are setting forth net zero targets or pathways, you know, signing up to frameworks like the UN PRI, or otherwise kind of demonstrating that they're making commitments to achieve certain ESG thresholds. And, you know, traditionally, oil and gas companies have been more focused on HS&E, so this has really been requiring them to provide additional information about other types of emissions, DEI standards, et cetera. So I think Kevin is going to...
Yeah, it was always a yeoman's task when you had to, but you knew which boxes to check when you were buying a company in the oil and gas industry, right? All you need to do is, do they own their assets, right? Are they leaking anywhere? And can we make money with them? But now that there's this whole overlay that you have to navigate, Kevin, what does that create for you on the M&A side for your clients? What issues does that raise?
Yeah, sure. So as Christina said, right, stakeholders, investors, just the general public is requiring a renewed focus on ESG. And, you know, efforts towards a decarbonizing future. And when you look at M&A in the energy context, right, you have to look at the, you know, groups that we're talking about, the big oil and gas companies, private equity, for perhaps infrastructure funds or impact funds, and they all have a slightly different angle in terms of how they perceive M&A in this new decarbonizing world. The big oil and gas companies, you know, you're noticing a shift where they're looking to sell on the margin their higher carbon assets and to buy or invest in lower carbon assets, or electrification or solar or wind. And so that's driving activity on the M&A for the big oil and gas guys. To take like an impact investing fund like a TPG Rise Climate, you know, they have a mandate not just to make money, but also to invest along, you know, something that improves the climate, something that they can measure. And you know, similarly, private equity in general, they have to report back to their LPs and they have to raise new funds, and their LPs are requiring that they make investments that are ESG friendly and that are ultimately improving the world around us from an ESG perspective. And so where this comes through, as you can see in the slide, is it affects underwriting. It affects how these buyers are looking at these target businesses for their investment decision or their acquisition decision. It's not just, does it meet the IRR threshold? It's not just, does it make strategic sense when you fold it in with your other assets or next to your other portfolio company? It has to also make sense from an ESG perspective. And so any of those potential buyers we just discussed, they're going to be doing...